Fred Film Radio.
International Film Festivals and Awards Macau.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 International Film Festival and Awards Macau, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Kirill Mikhanovsky, who is the director of Gimme Liberty, and also we have Alice Austin here, who is the writer of the film. Congratulations on the movie. It's called Give Me Liberty. Watched it yesterday, and I thought it was terrific. But for the benefit of the listeners who are not familiar with it, I was hoping that you might just say a few words to introduce it a little bit for them, and then we can talk about it in more detail.
It's a day in the life of a medical transport driver. His name is Victor, and he's a Russian-American. We never specify whether he's born in America or was brought to America at a very early age, but essentially a Russian-American who lives with his grandpa. And on this particular day, there are riots in the city. We don't know why, but there are just unrest, social, political unrest. And the van that's supposed to take his grandpa and his grandpa's friends to a funeral of their friend doesn't arrive. So what they do, they talk Victor, our main character, into helping them to get to the cemetery. However, Victor needs to work. He can't use the van for personal reasons. So he's trying to juggle all this, taking this 12-piece Russian-American choir to a funeral and continuing picking up his clients, dropping them off, picking them up. He's late for everything. You know, that's, you know, probably one-third into the movie, all hell breaks loose. And it's highly dramatic, suspenseful, but also very funny. And profoundly humane, and the rest you need to figure out for yourself watching it.
Right.
Did I do a good job? Mm-hmm.
Did you do a good job?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking about how to start off today because there was so much that I wanted to ask you, and this may sound a little bit of a cliche, but when I was thinking about the title itself, Give Me Liberty, and obviously, what was that line, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death? It's a profoundly American line in the minds of people, even from outside of the United States. Does that make this film a profoundly, in a sense, American movie in your mind's eye?
Well, I think that the film is absolutely an American film, and it resonates greatly in America, particularly in the political landscape in which we find ourselves today. When we wrote the film, we were in a slightly different political landscape because it was over 2 years ago. That being said, the film has resonated around the world in unexpected ways. And I think, you know, for example, Vic wears a yellow vest. Mm. And when we were doing our post-production in Paris, people kept saying, oh, les gilets jaunes, you know, the yellow vests. And we thought, oh, my God, of course, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the story is specific. It's about our common shared humanity. And the story has resonated for people around the world who are struggling to find ways to live in circumstances that are vastly imperfect.
That's a good point, actually. I'm wondering, regarding the story itself, is any of this autobiographical?
It's not autobiographical in the most traditional sense of the word. I did drive a van like that way back when I was kind of fresh off the boat. Newly American in Milwaukee. I did this job for about 9 months while in college. So that was a starting point for us to begin working on Give Me Liberty. But I treated that experience as a research. So I knew the job. I understood what it was. But we went on to create a 100% fictional work. No matter what you work on, you need to know what you're talking about. So again, that was just a research, so I wouldn't call it autobiographical. It's very personal work because for both of us, because of how involved we became in the course of the making of the film, much deeper than we even expected, simply because instead of a year and a half to two, we expected it would take that long to make this film. It took us about 5 years to get it off the ground and have it made.
It did. Was that also because the research was hard to do? When you said this film was 100% fictional, I was surprised because some of the parts of the movie seemed to me so realistic that it might have seemed to me almost documentary-like.
Well, we did do a great deal of research. And so, for example, the people with disabilities at the Eisenhower Center, we spent a lot of time there and got to know those people very well.
Yeah.
And are in close touch with them still. And I think that the time, even though it wasn't ideal and we wanted to make it much sooner than we were able to, it gave us the ability to work with them in ways we might not otherwise have been able to because there was such trust that had developed.
Because they are in the film and they actually are a part of the cast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's, again, it was a very precise script and sequence of actions and we had a plan, and then otherwise we wouldn't be able to make it, of course. But we could call it as a modern day neorealist film where we're taking it to real locations and we work with real people. And by inviting these elements into the film, of course, we're choosing a certain particular style.
Yeah.
We were not aiming for a quasi-documentary, but it does feel more visceral and real when you work with real people, with real lives who bring their life experiences into the frame. And, for instance, the film begins with James Watson, who is a quadriplegic man, in that bed, talking very intimately with someone he's trying to help, which was Victor. And, you know, even though James was a part of the script, and he was, and certain scenes were mapped out with him, obviously in that bed, in that room, in that location, he managed to surprise us with a certain way of saying certain things, but we prepared for that. So we knew that's how it would go. So it's combining preparation and the world of fiction with real existing elements creates a very interesting effect that is truthful.
Well, yep. And likewise, Lauren Lolo Spencer, who's our lead actress.
Yeah, she's great.
Her performance is so brilliant. She is an actress, but this is her first role. She does have ALS. She jokes that she has Stephen Hawking variant because there's a tiny percentage of people for whom the disease progresses slowly. She's an activist for people with disabilities. She came and delivered brilliant, brilliant performance. I mean, she was just so extraordinary. And she's now appearing on shortlists for Oscar nominations. Mm-hmm. And we're really, really hoping that happens for her because for so many reasons, so many important reasons, you know, not the least of which is that she delivers an Oscar-worthy performance.
Aside from her disability, she is a brilliant actress. I don't know, there's just an immediate connection to God. I don't want to sound like a third-rate preacher, I'll sound like a fourth-rate preacher. But there is a metaphysical element manifested through Lauren Spencer in a way that I don't think anyone can resist in the auditorium, and including ourselves. Every time we see her on the screen, we were moved. And I think the humanistic element that connects people around the globe who watch the film and react to it so warmly, I think she's one of the conductors of that.
One of the things that excites me, a lot of our listeners might be filmmakers in the making, in the sense that a lot of our listeners are actually film students, and I found this film to be very exciting on a technical standpoint as well. There's a lot of different uses of styles, and in fact the ending, without giving anything away, I don't know if that was an influence of yours, reminded me of Napoleon by Abel Gance. It was unbelievable. It was so real. Can you tell me about the mix of styles that we see throughout the film?
It's really interesting because I learned a lot about this from your question, because I never look at that this is a collection of styles, really, because for us it's all unified, and it's not widely, I'm not saying you said that, but it's not widely eclectic, but there's certain organic relationship between all parts that feel like they're parts of the same body. Some of it was calculated, some of it was discovered in the process of whether shooting or editing or sound designing, etc. But the idea is to never separate the audience from the experience, to always keep them in it. So whatever we could use creatively, you know, and not pretentiously, artistically, we never wanted to aestheticize the situation or the characters or their plight. You know, the idea was just to tell a simple story, but also deeply philosophically and emotionally resonating as well. We chose the style that fit our production, what we could afford and what, how many, we had very few days, and we had very diverse cast of people who needed to be respected, and we couldn't demand certain things from our actors with disabilities and our actors in their late 80s. So we needed to adjust the way to make this film to those conditions, and we had to react quickly, but we also needed to make a world-class film. So sometimes it would have to be handheld. Sometimes it was on sticks. Sometimes it was on an improvised makeshift dolly, also known as a wheelchair. And sometimes there are certain things, and you know, I love wheelchair. It's very, very immediate, and there's a certain particular way of doing this. I'm not a huge fan personally of Steadicam, unless you can tell it's a Steadicam. Mm. If we're talking about the craft specifically, we would make a point of making sure that we see people's hands. We would make a point of as much as we could to go as wide as we could without being too juvenile about it, because you can't just slap a wide angle lens in a 2 square foot space just to show everything. So we had ongoing challenges and try to, our cinematographer, Wyatt Garfield, is an incredibly cultivated and experienced human being with a very keen aesthetic sense. And of course, we had an incredible production designer with a $2,000 budget who pulled off incredible things. So it was pure survival. I think it was, in a lot of senses, was the first film for everyone, even for people with a lot of theater and film and cinematography and all kinds of experiences. For all of us, it felt like a first film where we were challenged on every step of the way.
Every moment, absolutely. And we had brilliant post-production.
Colorist,
Elliot Coca of United Post Production. He does Gaspar Noé and Claire Denis films. Mm-hmm. And he created some real magic.
Real magic.
With a mix of color and black and white that was quite spectacular.
We had a wonderful sound mixer, Julien Perez, based in Paris. On set, we had a genius, Jeremy Mazza, straight out, hailing out of Nashville.
Us. Everybody was wired in the van. I mean, there were certain practical things that happened were essential.
We knew we had some experience with that. We knew that no matter how low our budget would get, we could not compromise on the sound. Yeah. Because you would just have no picture. So at any given point, we'd have up to 12 channels. He would plant microphones on the floor and the ceiling, and then also wired as many people as it could, because we couldn't have more than 12 channels, really. So, but quickly, to your students out there that we understand very well, coming out of this experience of 5 years of survival, that really nobody cares about your films. Your films will come into existence only if you care about it.
That's a good point.
So if your students out there want to make their films, they should make them.
That's a good point to wrap up this interview on. Hey, there's so much, like I said, that I wanted to talk about the rhythm of the film itself. I think we could have gotten into... well, we're going to have to wrap it up. But I thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking with you about your movie, Give Me Liberty. Thanks a lot once again.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure.
This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.